This is the Dose of Fat, show number 138 for Friday, September 28th, 2018.
Welcome to the Dose of Fat podcast. Thanks to me, we are recording in the Midwest Family Broadcasting Studio. Bringing you a dose of beer here is Spinner Ryerson.
Hello, ladies and gents. And in the booth, we have Tio Gomez.
Bienvenidos, amigos.
Today's show is brought to you by the letters B and S.
And the numbers Juan and 8.
This evening's programming is made possible through corporate funding from the 8 Lumens Fuck Yeah Sock Empire.
And Leia's charming persona, which affords us the luxury of recording in the Midwest Family Broadcasting Studio. Ask Leia if she's friends with 94.1 JJL's biatch, and if she's ever done the fake at 8.
Please.
Do it. Do one. Come on. I'll do one.
Oh! Oh.
That's a short one.
You're welcome. And now Here's Teals Gomez with what in the Sam hell we're going to be talking about. And if you read this during the taping, you owe me $50. Fuck. I should have read ahead. All right.
We start the show with the bombastic and maybe sadistic race director Todd Poquette, straight out of Marquette. We visit with our local Ultra Tripper Crown Bodhisattva, Mr. Brett Stepanek. And then?
Well, let's take a break, and when we come back, it's Todd Poquette.
What was his middle name?
Okay, it's Todd fucking Poquette.
There you go. You're about to get checked by the Ice Queen on Fat Bike Radio.
Broken Spoke Bicycle Studio is Wisconsin's best fat bike dealer. They carry Specialized and Sasa and 509. And I don't know, man. I don't know what else to say. We tried to get them to record something, but...
George is still passed out from the Margie.
I saw some nice photos of him concentrating on rocks and stuff.
George. Yeah. Write us some copy. We'll read it for real. And I'll use my real voice if I have one.
Mm-hmm. And Leia swears that swears by their mechanics.
Yeah, I don't know where you're coming up with this script. You printed this script that's from like last week. Don't you
see
the
that's
updates?
What we're saying. No, she must not. No. No, but that's the same thing. But you like they work on your stuff, right?
Yeah. I don't let anyone else touch my bike.
Okay. And you wear their...
Wait a second. I've been touching your bike.
Nobody touches my bike.
Just kidding.
Nobody. Including you.
Including me.
Yeah, especially you. You'd be the worst mechanic to work on your bike.
Oh, man.
Where do my hands go?
What did I try to do the other day? I tried to take what are they? You know, the things that hold the water bottles?
Yeah, the water bottle.
I did a Gomez laugh.
Oh, no, he's doing
it. Oh, my God. His face is going to explode.
Okay.
That was for
remember
you.
Remember we asked her what is not disc brakes, and she's like...
That was for you.
Sorry, but yeah, those cages that hold the water bottles, what could it possibly be called?
This is the longest and the
it
worst.
It took me like a half an hour.
This is and half an hour to get a bottle cage
yeah,
off?
I'm trying to turn the... What are they?
So
some of them use Torx thingies now instead of Allen thingies.
If you are a bike shop and you do not use a torque wrench, you should be shot.
Oh! Wow. Now, and this is a testament to George because he really has a gift. You look at the people that he's sponsoring. People think can't even get a bottle. Don't even know what a bottle cage is. And she's winning races. So cheers. Cheers, George. Nice work out there.
So keep what was it. The rest of that?
So this is the longest and worst commercial we've ever done.
This is real. Okay. But they
this
won't,
is an endorsement.
This is
campaign.
An endorsement. They won't sponsor Dave Lunds because hashtag I'm not sorry. Hashtag say you're sorry. Hashtag yeah you are.
Oh my God! And he got us out of there.
Okay, here we go. And well,
and this is what
in
you
the
get
future.
When you don't give me a commercial schedule script.
Next, now we know better. But next time we'll foreshadow. We'll have George on the show. And the last day the Telemark was open, George and I got kicked out of there for being rad. And we'll have George on story time in the future. So
about being rad at the old Telemark.
Okay.
Hotel.
Now we got to call Todd. And we're back with Todd. The Todd.
let me first tell you a little bit about our guest, fucking Todd Poquette. Here I am, going up one of the steepest hills.
He doesn't even get to say hi.
3 hours into a race. No.
She's chewing you out before you even got to introduce himself.
We're on attack mode, because this is my chance.
That's what he would do to you.
You can't touch me here.
Okay.
See?
Welcome to the show, Todd.
So I'm going up this hill. I'm 3 hours in. I got no water. I want to kill myself. And I see a little picture of baby Todd. And it's like baby Todd is laughing at you.
Where is this at? Is this in Polar Roll?
This is in the Margie.
Oh, in the Margie. Okay.
Last year.
Okay.
It's 90 degrees. I'm literally about to die.
This is like baby
Todd. And
then
a little baby Todd, a picture of baby Todd. And it's like, it's because they have these signs. I was like, oh my God, I want to find that guy. I want to punch him in the face.
Is this guy like, would you kill baby Hitler? Like, and they put a baby Todd, so you think about, no, he was an innocent, nice person at one time.
Yeah, right.
You just compared our guest to Hitler before he said a word.
Sorry, Todd. How are you tonight?
I'm good. By the way, that sign, the idea was my wife's. Not mine.
Oh, she's just as Satanistic as you are.
She's trying to protect you.
Oh my gosh.
Protect you from the evil Leias of the world.
That was my first meeting with Todd. Baby Todd is laughing at you on my deathbed.
Oh.
Why are you so mean, Todd?
That was pretty good. That was pretty good. God damn.
So that was your wife's idea?
It was. Yeah. It was brilliant.
And what was the purpose? The baby Todd is laughing at you? Is that what it was?
Yeah, it's just to demoralize people, really.
Do you need more of that in the Margie? Is there not enough?
Yeah, so to backtrack, Todd runs the Margie, which is the single most toughest endurance race in the country.
Yeah, and it just happened this past weekend.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, yeah, how did last weekend go?
Man, it was way too easy, you know? The weather was too good. The trails were too fast. We got to mix it up next year.
Yeah.
You had an actual fake unicorn at the start there, I saw.
Yeah, that thing has been pretty popular. Yeah, that was great.
Is that every year?
This is the first year. We literally thought of it 2 days before the race, and I was scrambling to make it happen, and we were able to pull it off, and somehow it just worked, man. It was pretty sweet.
How many entries?
We had entries. We had over 800. I'm going to say like 830 registered participants this year between all events.
And wow. How many belt buckles did you give out?
We handed out 19.
There you go.
I saw that's one. There's one in Platteville today. Finishers, I saw it on Sunday.
Finishers under 12 hours, right? Get the belt
under
buckle.
12 hours for the bike, 100-mile bike, and then under 30 hours for the 100-mile run.
Ooh, people run that?
Yeah, people run it, too. And there's
did anybody on a fat sick. Bike get the buckle?
Sickos.
No.
No.
We did have a person get a buckle on a fat bike 2 years ago. Roy Kranz did.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. He was a guest on one of our previous shows.
Was he?
Yeah.
That guy's a wild man.
He had really sweet things to say about you, Todd.
And who do you blame? You tell everybody to blame...
Blame Danny.
Blame Danny.
Blame Danny, that's right. Yep. Okay.
And blame so who's Danny? Danny? I always think of you in these situations, and then there's blame Danny. Is that...
Yeah, everybody says, fuck Todd. Blame Danny.
is that your stage name, or is this an actual person?
No, Danny is the mastermind behind the trail. You know, Danny's been the president of Ramba for, I think, 30 years.
Ramba
is built Range Area Mountain Bike Association.
Range Area Mountain Bike Association. Okay.
Yeah, and it's out of Ishpeming, Michigan. You know, Marquette gets all the publicity, all the love. And, you know, rightfully they should get publicity, but Ishpeming's got just a tremendous system, and it's all hand-built. So. Yeah,
Eastern Wisconsin is beautiful. That's a poke. I should probably shut up and let Leah run her.
Well, isn't Ishpeming the tougher part of the course than the Marquette portion?
Absolutely. Yep. Absolutely.
And that's Danny's fault, not Todd's fault.
Blame Danny.
Okay, gotcha.
Yep, blame Danny.
So tell us about the course.
You did the 50 last year, right?
No, I only did 35 of the 50. I had to hashtag quitter.
Oofta.
Oh, you were one of those.
I like this guy.
Yeah, you do. You sign up for the Margie, and we'll see how much you're liking him.
Okay, we'll do that.
All right, I got one in for you.
The course, actually, we were talking about this with a couple of riders at the finish line on Saturday. It lures people into being overconfident because when you start the rollout, you leave Forestville in North Marquette, and it's all ski trails for, I'm going to say, 5 miles. And it gets into single track, but it's not technical single track by any means. And you can carry a lot of speed, so you're moving fast. You go up over top of the world, which is the first technical section where a lot of people end up walking. But really, I'd say that whole front end of the Margie Gessick is pretty fast, not technical, and you can gain confidence, which leads to overconfidence. You know, you go through the first 30 miles pretty quickly. When it gets into that storm drain that goes underneath Highway 41, you then coast down the Heritage Trail, which is a paved trail for 3-4 miles. Then you start getting into the South Trails, but it's still up until you get to the South Trails Pavilion, you really haven't seen anything. And that's why people, I think they push too hard because they start to think, this Margie Gessick isn't that bad. I mean, I'm flying. They just become overconfident. When you get into South Trails, that's the first time that reality really sets in. Because you enter around 38 miles, and when you go to leave South Trails and head to Nagani, there's about 12 miles of reality with the climbs. And Leah, you didn't get to see that last year because you guys went up the ski hill, you know, up the front of it.
Yeah.
And then you came back down and you go basically straight to Nagani. There's some big stuff in there. And you get into the first taste of the chunky, rocky, gnarly stuff. It's interesting how people can go into the South Trails at 38 and they come out just demoralized at 50. And then they still have to go up to Nagani and Ishpeming, which is, that's the backbreaker up there. And Nagani and Ishpeming, the way to put it together is it's all hand-built. You can't get any rhythm. It's up, it's down, it's rocks. Half the time in the rocks, you can't see a trail. You know, you're looking at it, and there's a sign with a red arrow, and you're like, I don't see a trail there.
Oh, snap. Well, and some people are doing it at night.
Jeremiah Bishop said that. He's like, I struggle to ride this stuff, you know, at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. There's people that are going to be out there. I think he called it, like, dragging their bike like a dead body through a swamp, you know, in the middle of the night.
Non-locals, yeah, too, that haven't rode it before, yeah.
And he's the one that won, right?
Yeah.
Did Tinker take second?
This year, we really had a great battle this year. Jeremiah won it. He had predicted he'd be under 10 hours, and he was 3 minutes under 10 hours.
Damn.
Wow.
So that was a new course record. Matt Acker came in after Jeremiah, followed by...
Matt, number two. We've interviewed him a couple times.
Yeah.
Remember?
No, he's
always
cool
number
dude.
Two.
Yeah.
We'll talk about him in a minute.
Yeah.
But yeah.
That's four times. All 4 years he's been number two.
Oh, man. Yep. Always a bridesmaid.
Yep. And he raced his ass off, man. Always a pallbearer.
But a good race overall. What was the finish percentage?
The DNF rate this year was actually low. It came in at 34% for the 100-mile race for the mountain bike.
Okay.
That's low.
The 100-mile run Yeah, that's low. 34% is low. Normally, I think last year was 70 with the heat and everything.
Yeah, it was bad.
I think, yeah, it was bad last year. The 100-mile runners, we had 27 of them show up. 12 of them finished.
Wow. But they're runners.
Yeah.
I don't care about those guys.
Yeah, that's wild. That's okay, weird. So tell us, you have three major races that you host up there. What are the, yeah. So you've got the Margie, and what are the other two?
Yeah. The 906 Polar Roll, which you've done.
The winner, the fat bike race.
Yep, she just wanted to hear you say it. Yeah.
And then you've got the Hammer. Then, what's that all about?
Yep. Hammer. You know, that's an adventure race, non-typical. There's no official race course. There's no official race course for the team aspect.
Does Hammer stand for something?
Huron Adventure Mountain Bike Race.
Huron Adventure Mountain Bike Race. Okay.
Yep. The team part of Hammer is adventure-based, and we put checkpoints out in the most despicable places and tell you to figure out how to go find them.
Oh.
And basically you have have 12 hours to collect as many checkpoints as possible in as little time as possible. So most checkpoints, least time wins.
Okay. But can anybody complete it as long as you get all 12? Or is there a time cutoff if you don't get back?
Yeah, I think there was a high of the total checkpoint count was 7.
Okay.
We had one team get all 7, and then I think one team get 6. And then most, I think the common number was 4 or 5 of the checkpoints. The weather this year was just horrendous. It downpoured most of the day and was in the high 50s.
What time of year?
So it was in July. It was July like 21st.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's hot.
Yeah, the weather sucked.
Okay.
It should be.
It's supposed to be hot, it was not hot? Okay.
Yeah, it's supposed to be hot, but it wasn't.
Okay.
The other, you know, the event that kind of sparked the creation of Hammer is the Sledgehammer portion of the event, and that's a 187 mile, what we call an enhanced gravel grinder, meaning, you know, gravel events are becoming popular throughout the country. This is a gravel event, but not the gravel you're used to. It'd be like dirty. Oh, you know what a racer said? They said it's like dirty Kansas meets Margie Gessick.
Oh, wow.
Created a gravel event.
That's not really gravel then. Is it just like rocks out in the country? Like a fire?
It's nasty, but it was super fun. We had 23 people take the course that morning. They're guided by GPX and GPX on GPS units. There's no course signage. There's nothing. Like, they have to navigate by their Garmin, and if their Garmin dies, then they're pretty much screwed.
Because
they're in the middle of nowhere. Finish or die.
In the middle of the UP where bars close at 9 p.m. Yeah, that'd be terrible.
Yeah.
Bring that thing to Wisconsin.
You definitely know the second you are over the...
When you cross the border.
Especially
at night when the bars are rocking, and then you cross through a town into Michigan, like, yeah, everything's closed. There's no bars. There's no neon lights. What's going on? But
So there's a talk of a fourth.
Yeah.
Can you give us a sneak peek on what you guys are thinking for that?
Well, the fourth event is part of the Triple Crown. So in order to qualify for the Triple Crown, you have to complete the 100-mile Margie Gessick, either the run or the bike. You have to complete the...
I was going to sign up for the 50 in 2019.
Oh, no. You're going to have
not if you want to be part of the Triple Crown.
Mm-hmm.
She's got a big enough head. She can wear 3 crowns on there. You better sign up. You better change your registration.
October 13th.
And right now, I believe there's only our good friend Matt Acker is the only one who has qualified so far. Is that true?
There's a couple more.
Is there?
David Kate Yeah, David Cate.
Cranzy.
Actually finished. Cranzy. Cranzy hasn't. He has to do the sledgehammer this summer. Yeah.
Okay.
So you have to do the long Margie. You have to do the long hammer, which is the sledgehammer. And then you have to do the long polar roll, which is the easiest of the three.
Congratulations on doing the easiest. Yes. So I'm just trying to imagine what kind of misery is in the fourth if you have to do the rest of those, but is it just like a cookout in your backyard with jazz playing? I mean, this is going to be the surprise.
It's definitely not going to be a cookout.
Okay.
Definitely not. It's going to be, the fourth event is actually top secret.
Damn it.
The only people that will know what it is are those who qualify for the Triple Crown. Once you're a Triple Crown member, you are one for life. Again, there's going to be a website we're going to put up. There will be a code that grants you access to the site. And unless you're a Triple Crown winner or a hacker, you're not getting it.
Upon the death,
I have a better chance at one of those.
Why do you hate mountain bikers so much?
Why do they pay you? You're like a mountain bike dominatrix. They pay you for pain.
I'm gonna tell my wife that tonight.
There you go. So what's going on with the 906 kids? They're taking over.
Oh man, those kids are so fast.
Yeah,
I had so many people tell me at the Margie, because we had, I think, 7, 8, 9 kids, 906 kids, do the 50-mile event. I had so many people. Wow. Come up to me at the finish line and just marvel at how fast those kids are and how well they ride. It's amazing.
How old are they that are finishing the 50?
Well, I'd say this year they're probably like 12.
Oh my.
11, 12, up to 16.
Those broken bones will heal at that age.
I'll tell you, Lucas Basil, who did it this year and last year, he did it the first year we did the Margie. And I want to say he was 9 that year.
Wow. Single digits?
Yeah.
Is there a special belt buckle? You got a single speed belt buckle. Single digit age.
Was he sitting in a baby seat behind somebody else?
He's on a trailer bike. Yeah. Wow.
He rode. So that year we finished on Jasper Knob. This was what was fun about the first year of the Margie. The finish line for the Margie our first year was at the top of Jasper Knob. So you did this nasty, the hardest, maybe the hardest ride of your life. And then we put the finish line at the top of just this brutal climb in Ishpeming. So you had to climb up. Well, when he came climbing to the top of the hill, I will never forget, he rode up to the top like he hadn't been riding for 5 minutes, set his bike down, and was just like walking around talking to everybody. And he was 9.
Wow.
Yeah. They don't know
his
pain.
His mom came up behind him, Michelle. Now, she's probably going to kill me for telling this story, but she eventually came up behind him, pushing her bike, out in front of her entire body, contorting to get to the top of Jasper Knob, and then proceeded to have, an entire body cramp for several hours. Because she was chasing this fucking
her little kid.
It's going to be you someday, Leah.
Oh, man. So, to answer the question, our program with the adventure team this year really grew significantly. We've worked with over 200 kids so far this year.
Wow, that's great.
I love hearing that. I mean, I went to the NICA race at Manuka a couple weekends ago, and it was a whole neighborhood full of tents and kids. Yep. It's just incredible.
Yep.
So what action figures did you have as a kid?
Is that a serious question?
Gomez wrote it down. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that was definitely a Gomez question.
That was a Gomez question.
I have never been asked that question. Oh, my God. G.I. Joe? I don't know.
Okay, that makes sense.
I was looking into your deep psychological, what would drive you to be the protagonist of an event like the Marge Yasek. I can
he waterboarded his G.I. Joes.
I can tell a lot about a man by what kind of dolls he played with when he was a child.
Wow. I'm going to give him a point for an unexpected question.
See?
You get a preferred start.
How many points does Leia have?
Hey, I got a buckle, all right? Yeah.
She named herself the Ice Queen after the Polar Roll last year.
Wait a second. You got a buckle for DNFing at mile 35?
No, baby. The Polar Roll.
There's
a buckle for that one, too.
We were talking
okay?
about the easiest of the three. I'm just quoting Todd.
Yep.
But, you know, that's... Todd Spinner are not invited to your wedding.
Yeah, none of us. I assume it would be a Margie sitting through a late wedding.
Torturous? Come on.
No.
That's going to be great. You're going to look great. You're going to have hot bridesmaids. You're going to have a great party.
Everybody, you should come. You can hear me sing.
Yeah. And nobody's going to know. All your records don't matter anymore because your name changed. All your records are gone. You got to start over.
Oh, hell no. I'm going to keep my last name and make it my middle name. I've had it for this lane way too long.
Yeah,
next Saturday. Mm-hmm. Boom, donezo.
Oh, my God. Seriously?
Yeah, it's going to happen. It's happening.
Oh, wow.
She's got a week to fuck it up.
Yeah. One more week to fuck it up.
If she backs out, she's going to text you, "I'm a quitter."
Yeah. You DNF this engagement. Hopefully you make it down the aisle.
Hashtag quitter.
We're all cheering for you.
Hashtag quitter.
You can do it.
Okay.
Well, I think that runs the gamut of serious to semi-serious questions that we had for you, Todd. We really appreciate you coming on the show.
Right on, gang.
Yeah.
Appreciate you having us on.
Your events scare me, but I'm going to do some next year. I'm going to say that.
Margie together.
We should? The 100?
Yeah.
Okay.
And you can carry me when I'm tired.
Oh, probably, yeah.
Aren't you thinking about going for the buckle?
Well, I was thinking of doing the 51st next year and then going for the buckle the year after.
Jump right in.
I mean, you're looking at the best times of the women and the 50, and it's 7 hours. So you add another 50. I mean, the best I can see me doing at this point is 14 hours.
This is sounding a lot
so
like
somehow
Spinner's,
we got to figure out a way to knock 2 hours off this sucker.
Three-year plan to nail Cole House.
Yeah.
Did any women break it this year?
No.
What was the fastest time for the woman?
Ooh, you know what? Hang on, I can give you that real quick here.
And who was it?
Have a statistician?
And Leia wants her social security number and a home address.
You be quiet. Who was it?
It was Carla Williams.
Carla Williams?
Yeah. And let's see here.
And while you're in there.
Yeah. Look up the single
speed finishers this year?
Yes, there were.
This is what you call riveting podcasting right here.
Here you go. So Carla Williams finished in 12:25. She missed it by 25 minutes.
Oh, my gosh. She's so close.
Oh, God.
So
now,
it's awesome.
the next closest was Chelsea Strait at 15 hours.
Jesus.
Yep. Yep.
So, and for single speeders this year, anybody get a buckle in the single speeds?
Yeah, we had one. Brian Furman from
Brian Furman,
Decorah, Iowa.
Yes.
Yep. Yeah, I got to meet him. Shake his hand, dude's a stud. There's a lot of good riders that come up.
He kicked me out of his house for falling asleep with shoes on in his bed.
What?
That's a story for another.
Oh gosh, here we go.
But, oh man,
he's got a forge.
Hanging with that. Oh my God,
Gomez! This is your job to reel it back in.
Yeah, this is where
where you come in.
I've been making.
Don't text quitter next weekend.
Mm-hmm. Nope. Keep torturing people. Come up with some maniacal, hurting people, breaking bikes, and you get a kickback from broken bike companies. Like the bike shops give you.
Just Just wait for the year five. You're coming in the worst year, man, because there's going to be some diabolical shit going on.
Oh, great.
Looking forward to it. All right.
They've seen nothing yet. All right, I'll let you guys go.
Yeah, thanks, Todd.
Thanks, Dad.
All right, we'll see you. Have a good night.
Yep, bye.
Why in God's name?
Breaking news. We take you to Madison, Wisconsin for story time with Spinner und Brett.
Again, why would anyone not give their kid the middle name fucking?
Like Brett fucking Stepanek?
Boom.
Ooh. We're going to jump in. So we have Brett fucking Stepanek in the radio station. How you doing, Brett?
Very good.
Awesome. Glad you could make it. This is a story time segment. You've rode bikes for a long time. You've had a lot of experiences. I don't even know where to go with that, but every time I've talked to you, you've come up with something new, and there's something new and crazy you did, and you recently just smashed your minivan and gave it to a junk guy. But you have a lot of stories on a bike as well, so yeah.
Yeah.
I guess that's about it.
Yeah.
I want to hear about this gravel race.
The Alexander 380.
Yeah.
The latest gravel race.
That was this past May.
Where you're actually riding on gravel, not rocks, in a prairie.
Right. So, right. These are, and I've done the Almanzo 100. Chris, God, what's Chris's last name that ran it? Shit.
Chris shit?
Chris fucking what?
No.
Chris fucking shit.
No, he was adamant for a
great
long time
name.
That he put on a major gravel race in southern Minnesota. And the background I know, and Brett, correct me if I'm wrong on this because I'm sure I'll get it wrong, but it starts with the family from Little House on the Prairie. And the Almanzo brothers, or no, Almanzo was one of the brothers. Do you know any of the history? You just ride your bike?
I just ride my bike.
Okay. The Almanzo is the 100-mile race.
Correct.
And then there's also a metric, which is, you know, the 100-kilometer, which is 60-some.
It goes the Almanzo 100, the Royal at 162.
Royal and Almanzo were the brothers. And now there's the Alexander.
Yep, the Alexander's 380.
380, yeah. Because for a while there, he was doing the 100 miles, 100 kilometers, 160. But yeah, the 380, I'm not even exactly sure where that came from. But you thought, that sounded like a great idea.
So do you have to get warmed up for a race like that?
And by warmed up, you mean ride your bike to the race?
Toked up and ride that far, yeah.
So yeah, I the last major bike race I did before this Alexander was a CTR. Basically last year the Colorado Trail Race. Yep.
Listeners at home, there we go.
Which was the last leg of my Triple Crown finish of last year. So that one was 580 miles from Denver to Durango. So when I finished that, that's when I got my world record for the first male single-speed bikepacking finisher.
Woo-hoo! Which is crazy that a female had done it on a single-speed before you, right?
Alice Drobna did it first, mm-hmm. and she's faster. I haven't technically added up the hours yet, but basically, yeah, she's about 2 days quicker than me.
Oh. So, all right.
Yeah.
But she hasn't done this stupid thing that you did.
I don't think so. But, yeah, so I get to this point where I need to enter this realm of my mind where I just put myself into this like primordial, I walk off the abyss of my own brain, and I have to put myself in these very caustic situations where I can't do it with a lake loop. I can't do it on a, yeah. I mean, not even, yeah, I need to put myself in these really crazy environments to feel this feeling. And I didn't know I was addicted to it until, doing 3 Tour Divides, 2 AZTs, it's something that I'm heavily addicted to. And the only way I can do it is by putting myself in these really crazy environments.
And you have crazy bikes too, because your bike was Bangarang?
Yes.
Last time I saw a Bangarang, it had a 29-inch wheel in the back and a 24-inch wheel in the front. You had it in the shop at Rev or something. And there was a tiny wheel on the front. I don't remember what you were doing exactly, but
I think we just put something on it, messing around. But no, that was a custom made bike by Aaron Rodgers here in town. He approached me in 2014 because he knew I was doing the race the Tour Divide again in 2015. So he wanted one of his bikes made to do that race.
Steel bike.
Steel bike.
He welded it.
Yep, right here. Like it was a quarter mile away from my house that the bike was incepted. Went down.
And this is a regular, like, it would be like a mountain bike, like a 29-inch mountain bike. It's not like a gravel bike specific. It's not anything like that.
We built it around 650B. Okay. So in 2012, my first Tour Divide was on 26-inch. I was one of like 12 people out of the two.
How tall are you?
6'3".
Oh, my goodness.
I come from a BMX
freaking
background.
Tricycle. Yeah.
No, I come from a BMX background, so I like to move the rear wheel the way I want. And I gave 29ers a shot, and I can't move my front wheel the way I want. I skid into corners. People don't like following me. I curb nibble. I nibble on everything on the trail. Like, I don't take straight lines. I like to bunny hop. And so the 650B was, when I made the transition from 26 to 650B, I could still sit and, or like, basically what was the difference was, like, there were sections that I could sit and climb versus stand and climb on the 26. So, like, I can, it's a total happy, like, just a happy medium for sure.
Gotcha. Is that what you rode on this?
Yep. So everything, on the Alexander, I actually rode 700C.
Oh, 700C.
Yeah,
okay.
700C with Canty brakes. So this was my first real, this was a gravel race on my old Bianchi Volpe that I rode across country in 07 and 08. Single speeded. But yeah.
Okay.
Little different without disc brakes for sure.
And so, okay, so the Alexander is 380 miles.
Correct.
And it is in Spring Valley, Minnesota.
Yep.
And we live, you live.
In Madison.
In Madison, Wisconsin. And your idea for this race was to ride from Madison to Spring Valley.
Correct.
Which is how many miles?
220.
220 miles on the 700C cantilever bike.
Correct.
And do the race.
Yep.
And then.
So yeah, I rode there 38:15 so I could get a little bit, I knew there was going to be a lot of road. And then
that
when
was
I got
gear ratio 38:15. Okay.
And then I switched it to 16 when I got there. So I did gear down a little bit for the gravel.
It's not much, but yeah. and I've done El Monzo a few different times, and the hills are pretty incredible. And to get from Wisconsin to Spring Valley, Minnesota, you have to cross the Mississippi.
Correct.
And that's the driftless region, and there's a shit ton of hills in there. So
yeah.
And you found them all.
Yeah, every one of them.
Okay.
Didn't miss a hill.
I bet he did. Which way did you, where'd you cross a river at? Across or
Prairie? Prairie du Chien.
Prairie du Chien, okay. Yep. Yeah, that's, I go through there all the time. That's hilly as fuck.
So yeah, I left Madison on Wednesday afternoon. Basically just, of course, I'm late to the starting gate. I wanted to leave that morning, but before I left, I treated this like any kind of what, like any race I do, unprepared as hell, just going for it.
With some M&Ms in your pocket.
But you had a bag of Cheetos in your back, right?
I raided my pantry and basically found some old Halloween candy and took some granola bars. I knew the ride there was going to be going past a bunch of convenience stores. So I basically just left town with what I had.
And the race starts Saturday morning.
The race starts Friday morning. So,
The Alexander starts. Okay.
The Alexander starts Friday morning at 5 a.m.
And you left here Wednesday at?
Wednesday afternoon, like 6. maybe it might have been around 4, but yeah, I left Wednesday afternoon wanting to leave that morning.
Okay.
But.
So you're 4 hours behind.
Right. So, exactly. So I left with basically just a bag of candy, a bunch of stuff I just raided out of the pantry, and just, you know,
going to prairie. Okay,
exactly. So I really wanted to get to the Mississippi River that night. I wanted to just take the highway all the way there, and so I took gravel. I mean I could have hopped on the road, but I actually rode gravel all the way to Dodgeville. I took the Military Ridge Trail all the way to Dodgeville.
Is that what, 40 miles?
50-ish.
Okay.
So
which a Military Ridge is like a cinder trail.
Yeah.
So pretty, fairly flat.
Fairly-ish. I hit a lot of mud out by Blue Mountain State Park. So right away, just getting the stuff gritty. But as I was going and as I was working, I felt pretty good until back to that Halloween candy. I ate too many damn root beer barrels. And got a bellyache.
That's hard candy. It's not even.
I tend to, like, when I'm actually, like, in the days, like days into a race, I realized that I need to switch from the sugar to the fat. So, but I just jumped in and I was just, you know, I was just running on adrenaline. This guy, Mikey, this kid that hangs out at Budget, he actually rode out with me all the way to Blue Mounds. Just kind of paced him a little bit. Just needed a buddy, and he just hopped on. And I made it all the way to Dodgeville, and then those damn root beer barrels, I got a bellyache, and I wanted to get to Mississippi, but I ended up sleeping behind a warehouse in Fenimore. So I only went about 80.
Okay.
When I wanted to get to at least the Mississippi. So
that's still a ways, yeah. Okay, so you're not even halfway, and this is what? So you bed down Wednesday night?
I bed down, like, just clicking over into Thursday morning. So I slept for about 4 hours, got back on the road, and worked my way towards Spring Valley.
Okay.
So I crossed over in Prairie du Chien. I got breakfast at McDonald's in Prairie du Chien because, you know, you need the fat.
Yeah.
And then worked my way towards Decorah where I was linked up with Ward Budwig.
Yep.
And so he treated me to lunch, told me a bunch of stories from his adventures. We talked bikes.
Mm-hmm.
Super cool dude.
He's right around the world.
Yeah, he's coming out with his book very soon.
Oh, cool.
So that was super, super enlightening to, you know, to hear stories from him. And so,
did you know him before that?
Didn't know him before that. Tim Stanton from the Cargo Bike Shop hooked me up with him. He knew that.
Because Stan lived in Decorah for a while.
Yeah,
that's right.
So he hooked me up with Ward and basically said, if you're going through, you got to hook up with Ward. So that was super fun. Kind of got my second wind in there and eventually made it to Spring Valley. I took a photo at the Spring Valley sign 11 hours and 45 minutes before the start of the race.
Chris Scogan, that's his last name.
Yes.
Chris Scogan, yes. He's been running for a long time. So,
yep.
So we're not even – now you're at the race start.
I'm 220 miles into – yeah. So I just got to where I'm going to start racing less than 12 hours from now, 380 miles of gravel.
And the big one up there, I guess the big one, when I say the big one, it's the 100 because that's what the most people register. How many people were even registered for Alexander? Do you know?
Seven people started.
Okay.
Did seven finish?
Only three finished.
How many else rode 200 miles?
Maybe four.
Did anybody else ride to there?
I don't think anyone else rode their bike to a 380-mile race.
There's smarter people out there.
Right.
So you get like 10 hours of sleep?
I got about 10 hours of sleep, yeah. Maybe a little less. My buddy Andrew Aaron from Milwaukee was doing the Royal. So he was already in town. He pre-rode a bunch of the course. He met me in town. We went to the grocery store. I got all my stuff. And then there was a campsite about 2 miles out of town just on course. And so we went out there. I packed my bike, got it all ready. I ditched my seat bag, ditched my sleeping pad that I used the night before, and basically just was ready. So
mm-hmm.
I think I might have had about maybe sub 7-ish hours of sleep because I had to wake up at 4. After all the, you know, we got dinner and after all the stuff, you know, packing the bike. And
did you have more than one kit?
I don't wear a kit. I don't wear a chamois.
He had cut off jean shorts and Leonard Skinner t-shirt.
Your ass is made of iron.
I wear wool underwear.
Steel taint.
I haven't worn a chamois since Wham Sutter, Wyoming, Tour Divide 2015. That's another story. So, yeah, I don't. I wear a wool t-shirt, wool underwear, shorts with pockets because I need to carry stuff.
Did you have an extra pair of shorts?
And a cowboy shirt. No, I didn't have an extra pair of shorts. Well, underwear.
We're across the river.
It's naturally. It's naturally antimicrobial. Wool underwear is the ticket.
I don't know if it's natural antimicrobial.
I'm just spouting off nonsense.
Yeah, I was gonna say.
But so
there's
I don't wear a kit. I don't wear a kit. I show up in shorts with pockets and a wool t-shirt and a cowboy shirt over it.
Yeah. I love it when that guy shows up and then beats the spandex roadies. So just want to say, yeah, Leia would be giving you a shit and then be crying when you passed her. So, how important is sleep and rest? I think we've rode before, and I'm pretty sure I've seen you pedal with your eyes closed. I think you can pedal as you sleep. But as far as rest, I mean, it's probably not even quality rest except for that you're exhausted. So
no.
When you lay down, you're just out.
Yeah, exactly. I have a two-check system that basically I know that the stuff I do is unsafe. in a certain realm. So basically, I have a two-check system. So I'm very date-orientated. Like, I just spouted off Wham Sutter, Wyoming, you know, Tour Divide 2015 in June. So, like, I use these dates. I use my son's birthdays. I just use all these special dates in my life to keep myself sane. And if I hesitate on a date, if I hesitate in the slightest, I then have to sing the refrain of a Johnny Cash song. If I miss my two check system, then I have to force myself to either walk or stop and sleep.
Okay.
Because you're getting delirious.
I'm getting.
You can't remember things that you know by heart.
I need to be. Yeah, exactly. Like, I need to be safe. I don't want to wrap myself around a tree. So if there was a fly on my handlebars, you're looking at a complete nut. Like, I'm constantly talking to myself. I'm constantly reciting things. I'm very vocal when I ride my bike. When I'm out there like that, yeah.
No headphones?
Headphones for a little while, but there is... I'll get into that but headphones will make me sleepy. It needs to be a special time. Usually it's only in the morning that I rock music.
The two-check system, did you get that from somewhere, or did you make that up?
I made that up.
Yeah? You're just like, these are the two
things?
These
are kind of, yeah, because, like, if anybody knows me, like, I weirdly know a lot of dates. Like, don't ask me about the Gettysburg Address, but I'll know the day I got a CD or something, like a special something. Like, it's very different where, yeah, I have these dates in my head.
Huh. Okay. So we're here, and you get a little bit of sleep before the race. Race is about to start. There's seven of you.
Yep.
Then what?
So, yeah, it just says go. I mean, it's a very anticlimactic start to this race. It's basically we start in downtown Spring Valley, and we just all line up, and we go. I know that there's going to be hundreds of people just gathering, like, downtown in, like the next day. But
yeah,
the seven of us who were crazy enough to sign up for the 380, we just—
They talk about you when the 100 starts. Like, these poor suckers are out there.
Right.
And they already have 24 hours in before the rest of you guys start.
Exactly.
Okay.
There's a guy, he has the course record. I forgot his name, unfortunately, but he finished 380 just about an hour before the Royals started the next day. So he did 380 miles in 24 hours, roughly.
Wow.
So he was at the start line this year and had absolutely nothing on his bike. I mean, he knew the course, and, like, I mean, I don't know the course, so I'm kind of stuffed to the gills with food because I don't really know where water is, and so I'm pretty packed.
And there is, so when I did, there was no, they were marking the course with they took a brand and branded it into cedar shingles, and then when you came up to the corner, they had a shingle staked into the ground where you're supposed to turn. There is no GPX file or anything like that.
For the 380, yeah, there is a GPX file.
Good.
Yeah.
Because
but you still have cue sheets as
you
well.
You still have cue sheets, yep. And we had cue sheets, yep. That's right. Okay.
So, but, I mean, it does get confusing out there, yeah.
There's so many roads, and they all look the same. It's in Minnesota, and you get in these, you can see for miles. And it's almost like, if you think about South Dakota, there's not a lot of, when you get into cornfields, every gravel road is corn on this side, corn on this side, and gravel straight ahead of you. And you turn a section, and it's the same.
Exactly.
Right? So without that, you could easily get lost.
I'm trying to – I think there is a GPX file. I hope there is.
There should be if there's not.
There should be. Yeah. No, but, yeah, basically it's cue sheets and it's off you go and boom. Exactly. It is country roads, no signs. A fair amount of them don't have any signs, and it's just out there.
And if you miss a turn, you can go miles before you realize, did I miss something?
And there's no – tire marks for you to watch. Granted, right. There was a few with, I mean,
especially you guys.
Exactly.
There's no bikes in front of you.
There's no bikes. I mean, there were in front of me
one or two.
Yeah, but there was just, yeah, not a lot to go off of.
Right.
So, yeah, I continued. I mean, I just continued as best I could and just kept awake. And I mean, I was feeling pretty good. Like, when I start these things, I feel like, I mean, there's a sense of fervor for sure. I'm definitely like, okay, it's race time. Let's do this. And I'm the guy in a cowboy shirt, rocking out music. Just,
your nipples bleed or anything?
No.
Okay.
I don't have nipples.
You have
those been gone years ago.
they rubbed off.
You guys thought the action figure question was weird.
I accidentally ran a marathon once, and I found out why your nipples bleed and why people put Band-Aids on there. That'll be the story for a different time. But so you have a
you ran
bivy? Accidentally ran a marathon. Oh. So bivy sack. What are you sleeping?
Not for like the Colorado Trail race and the Tour Divide and all that. I do carry a bivy, but for this race, I didn't carry a bivy.
But you know, it's gonna be you're gonna have to sleep in the middle of this race, right?
I do, but I use a system basically. So I've out of all these races and throughout the years, I've figured out that I can use my clothing as timers. Basically, I can.
Huh?
Yeah. So I've done it before where it's like it's very easy to zip up your sleeping bag, roll over in your bivy, and basically just sleep through three alarms and wake up 5 hours later and just be like, crap.
Because you're comfortable.
Because you're comfortable.
Okay.
When you use your clothing as timers, you can't sleep when you're cold. You can't sleep when
fucking sun comes up and it's burning.
You're uncomfortable.
Shit.
So
okay.
I also have. For myself, I always try to sleep on an uphill. I always try to sleep on an uphill because when you restart,
Why would you stretch when you can fucking climb? Is that what you're talking about?
So I always sleep on an uphill.
Leia's face right now. If I could explain Leia's face. She is so
there's
confused.
Like no
there's
reprieve
so much pain in your
from
life.
Discomfort.
No.
Like you have to sleep in discomfort.
He sleeps in his cover, so yeah, he will wake up.
Yeah, exactly. So when I stop, I like outside temperature versus what I'm wearing for how tired I am. I just basically have this algorithm in my head that if I know that if I sleep with my knee warmers on and my vest and maybe my hat, then that's like a 45 minutes. Or if I do this, that, and this, it's going to be a half hour until I wake up without my alarms and be awake. So I use my clothing as timers
or lack of
clothing as timers, correct?
Because so if you put on a hat, you'll sleep for 45 minutes, and if you don't, it'll be 30.
There is, yeah, exactly. Like
you don't set an iPhone alarm.
There's five of them. Basically, I set like five alarms within 5 minutes of each other because I have, in complete cathartic, absolutely tired to the bone. I've turned off like all these alarms. So I use my clothing and a multitude of alms to
so
wake
purposely make it so that you'll be uncomfortable so
correct.
That when the alarm goes off you're like I gotta get out.
Sleeping on the side of the road with my helmet on. I sleep with my helmet on too.
My gosh.
That's not really sleep.
It's so
you daydream at night.
Yeah, it's it's not really sleep. It's tricking yourself that you sleep.
So okay, so you rode to the race, you had a little bit of sleep. How far did you make it before you think you first rest session?
I know out of this, like I finished this race in 2 minutes before 40 hours and I slept a grand total of 35 minutes during this.
Oh, man. Leia, what do you think? If I could describe Leia's face.
I don't know. We're in a whole new universe.
This is out of the solar system.
I just can't get around how bad you must smell by this point.
It's the wool.
if you took your shorts off and you put them on the ground, they just stand up.
It's not that bad. So I mean, but the race was awesome. Like so, when we left Spring Valley, we headed south and we start dipping into Iowa. We go back into Minnesota. We dip back in. I didn't know where I was until trucks passed me or cars passed me. I could see the license plates and be like, I'm in Iowa again or I'm in Minnesota again. So.
Yep.
You work your way all day, and then, I mean, these roads are awesome. Like, these gravel roads are super rad. Like, I mean, and especially being a single speeder, like, you got to blast these hills. So you got to stand up. And so I'm all day I'm feeling really good, riding with a few people here and there, whenever I could. But, yeah. I mean, I know that I need to go through the night, and I'm pretty excited to just keep going. And
I would not be excited after getting there. I mean,
wait a minute.
This total weekend is way over, well over 500 miles.
Did you bike home then?
I did not bike home. Andrew gave me a ride home. So it was like 612 miles.
On a single speed?
In 4 days, yeah. But.
And you said what, 35, 15, 35, 16?
For the race, it was 38.16.
38.16.
Yeah, on a 700C.
Okay.
Can I ask one question?
Yeah.
Does Chris Scogan live at the Little House on the Prairie?
He's back in Minnesota, I believe, but he did it for a while, and he was adamant that this race stay a free race. He got sick of people charging for people to ride their bikes, and he did a lot of effort in that race for free.
Didn't you say that it had something to do with Little House on the Prairie?
Well, so Royal and Almanzo were the two brothers of, what's the little girl on the prairie's name?
Characters.
Laura Ingalls?
On
Wilder. Royal Wilder and Almanzo Wilder.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's actually the museum.
So the different levels are named after characters on Little House
of the Brothers. Yeah. Yeah. And Alexander was a baby or something like that. I can't remember exactly what the whole thing was.
I got water at that museum.
You did? Okay.
Yeah.
The museum in Baroque.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. When you're out on these, I'm constantly like, I'm just always looking for spigots going through town and like, I know that gas stations like suck up time. Like my first tour divide was 26 days because I still had a sense of like road touring in me. My second tour divide was 6 days quicker because I attacked it with 10 minutes. I set a 10-minute timer on my watch, and anytime I stop and I'm off my bike, it's 10 minutes total.
Whether you feel like you're ready to go or not.
Yep. If I'm not straddling my bike within that 10 minutes, I damn well be doing it in the next 30 seconds.
Oh.
I set a timer on my watch and I'm literally running in gas stations and just grabbing my stuff outside, go. Cause I can, it's really easy to plug your phone in and, pull your phone out or whatever. And, like kick your feet up and just, and all of a sudden you're like, oh, it's 42 minutes later. Like, no, you gotta go. These races, you gotta go.
Cause when you look at technology these days and the bikes that people are buying and the clothing and everything is to make you more comfortable. So you're more comfortable, like your bike is lighter or your gears turn better or you have a bigger range and lighter weight and you're purposely making yourself uncomfortable.
Yes.
So that you'll ride more.
Yes.
So that
I'm sadistic.
Do you have orgasms on your bike? Did you build in blowjobs into this bicycle? Or I mean, why do
we'll
you want to be
that.
On that bike so fast?
We'll get into that.
Because it doesn't sound like it's a lot of fun. But
So here he is in the middle of the race.
So
he doesn't wear those shorts
for
most
of the ride. Cream?
Yeah.
So I ended up about a couple, like 150-ish in. I came across this guy, Andy from Minneapolis, and he was just off course, a little bit. And I rode past him, and like, you guys know me, I could make a rock talk back to me. So I was kind of asking him what he was up to, and he goes, I think I'm going to quit. I'm going to ride back to Spring Valley. And I was like, oh, dude, are you making a good decision? And he's like, I think so. So he's like, I'm like, well,
at 150,
something like that. A little bit in. And
halfway, don't turn around.
Maybe it was at 100. I don't know.
Hey, yeah.
But
I get you.
Anyways, so like I'm like, hey man, well I'd love to have a riding buddy, like let's I'll be on course, you're gonna catch me on my single, so just so I just wanted to say hi, and basically so I kept going, and I was riding with two other guys, and I just attacking the hills because I have to on the single, and I look back about an hour or so later, and there's Andy. So that night Andy and I kept going. We crossed the Mississippi together. We hit the Mississippi late in the afternoon. And having a buddy to kind of ride with and kind of feed off of a little bit and, kind of rabbit off each other, that really helps a lot. And so we were chatting, we were talking, we, got the rest stops, like our gas stations and stuff. And at being a very, date and lineal person, I had to stop at midnight. I wanted to see exactly where I was at midnight.
Mm-hmm.
And so at midnight, we stop, and we were in Wisconsin somewhere, just a little bit before Prairie, and I stop, and we were pretty much almost halfway. We were halfway through the race, which was pretty cool. And at that very moment, he was behind me, and we stopped on a hill, and so I just took a photo of where of my GPS, and as we kept going, as we literally continued, I turned around and I was saying something to Andy, and I was reaching around and I put my right hand back on my hood, and at the exact second a bunny jumped into my front wheel, and
is it dark out?
It's dark out, yeah. So a bunny jumped right in my front wheel, and if I wouldn't have had my hand on that handlebar, I would have been seeing a dentist the next week.
Oof.
Like it was that quick. And I just, I think I killed a bunny. And Andy's like, you did. The poor bunny lost his. So yeah, he jumped in and his
front wheel, back wheel,
front wheel.
Oh boy!
Right into the spokes and into the fork blade. So snapped his neck, unfortunately. But I turned around because I didn't want to leave him suffering in the road. So I turned around and I took him off the road. I kind of put him in the bushes, and there was a pool of blood now on the road. So I needed to do something for this rabbit. So I took his blood and took a big leaf and rubbed it all over my back chainstays and seat stays and just let his spirit ride on with me. At that point, I'd been up since 5 a.m. and it was midnight the next day. So there was some weird stuff going in my head. But yeah. the bunny's spirit kept going.
Okay.
So at midnight, so then we ended up in Prairie du Chien around 1.
Okay.
And we were just over 200 miles in. And at that point, Andy called it. He's like, man, he rode with me for like a good 100 miles. Like, uh-huh. I think he was there like just sub 100 now that I think about it. So he rode all the way to Prairie, and he called it. And I was like,
it's got to be close to that back to Spring Valley. I mean,
we're about 200 miles in.
Yeah.
200-ish miles in. So we still had a lot.
There's nothing to call. You got to finish at that point.
But he, like, you know, some people.
Call an Uber.
You just.
There's Ubers in Prairie du Chien, Wisconsin.
There was a Super 8 next to, or a Motel 6 next to the gas station. And so at that point, I knew that I lost, in a sense, I lost another rabbit because like Andy and I were kind of feeding off each other, and like it was good to have a buddy.
That's your second rabbit.
Yeah, and so it was good to have a buddy in the middle of the night. So I just knew that I just like, okay, I'm gonna go down the rabbit hole of being super tired very quick. So right when he called it and he left to go to the hotel, I walked right into the gas station and now it's two Red Bulls. It's two Red Bulls at 1:30 in the morning. And so I leave Prairie du Chien, and I go up and over the bridge that I had gone over a day and a half ago.
Yep.
And kept going on course. And at this point, basically, like, I lost all my luster, and it was around 2 o'clock where I'm like, I'm seeing double. I can't. I need a break. So I set an alarm for 30 minutes on my phone, and I slept from 2 o'clock to 2:30.
Gomez, can we pause? We're in the middle, and I got to pee really bad.
Oh, my God.
Oh, sure.
Because he's like 8 beers in.
Yeah, I know. Leah's on the edge of her seat, and we're right here, and I'm like, oh, that's
I'm like, wait for what's next?
Stand by.
Oh, my God. You can continue with that. I'll be right back.
Stand by. Spinner has to pee.
Go.
Okay, so Spinner's back. So yeah, basically it's 2 o'clock in the morning now, and Andy's called it. So now I'm just like, I know I was going to get tired. So even after two Red Bulls and all this riding, 200 plus miles in.
You mean you were tired after like 400 miles? I mean, what's the big deal?
Yeah, and so and there's 7 of you that started,
right?
And you are off the course. You're not even close to the El Manzo course. And you're not going to see any other riders.
No one. So yeah, exactly.
You lost the one guy that you've seen. Yeah. Have you seen anybody else?
Other than the, like, when I left, when I talked to Andy at about the 100-mile mark, we were riding with two other people, and they I think, called it a few, like, a 50-ish miles after we started riding together. So at this point, I don't know exactly where I'm at, but I think there's roughly about 5 people on course
still. And, okay, so, you don't know, are they ahead of you? You know people behind
you? There were people behind us. So, yeah, I knew that there was either definitely people ahead of me and some people behind me. So that kind of pushes me as well.
Okay.
But 2 o'clock in the morning now. I've left Prairie. I'm working my way back into the northeastern Iowa, and I hit a wall. Like that's the wall. I just like, okay, I'm definitely unsafe right now. So
it doesn't get easier from there.
No, it doesn't get easier at all. And so it was a perfect spot for me to stop because it was a hill. And so I stopped. I
on the uphill.
Yeah, exactly. And what I do is that I prepare for my stop as I keep going. So I'm like, okay, when I stop, this is what I'm gonna eat real quick. This is what I'm gonna drink this much water. I prepare myself for the stop, so I'm not wasting time. And so right around 2 o'clock, I stopped and I stood there for a few minutes and did my stuff, and I realized, okay, I'm pretty sweaty. I'm kind of doing what I'm like, I'm going through that algorithm in my head of what clothing I need to wear to sleep for how long I want. And I ended up, you know, basically just putting on my cowboy shirt and putting on my hat, keeping it above my ears, keeping my helmet on.
And this is a stockinette. So it always fits over your helmet, fits on top.
Yeah, my helmet fits on top of this like smart wool skull cap thing and whatever. Mm-hmm. So I felt good on my on where I was on my clothing timer, and I set three alarms on my phone, and I slept from 2:05 until 2:35. It was instantaneous. I mean, I was out like a light, just boom, done. And then I granted myself a 5-minute snooze. I was like, that's not long enough. So I let myself sleep for 5 more minutes and woke up. And so I had 35 minutes of sleep. And why I start on a hill again is because I wake up cold, because that's what keeps me from sleeping in. And I'm telling you, like, this is...
Don't have a blanket.
This
you can't.
No blanket, no bivy. I'm on the side of the road. I'm literally laying on the, like, knobby asphalt on the side of a road. My bike is leaned up against a guardrail.
I lived there for a long time. There's a lot of drunk drivers, man.
I'm
run over by a diesel truck.
I'm definitely dipped off, like, you know, I'm okay. 5 feet off into the shoulder or whatever. Like,
yeah.
I'm okay. But, like, so at this point of the night, I start going. I mean, so I'm back on my bike at 2:40 a.m. And I keep – so at this point, I can start to feel this transition. And what I mean by that is that, like, I can – it's a slow – I'm basically starting to trip. And at this point, I'm so lethargic and I'm so
– And this is drug-free?
Drug-free.
Okay.
I'm starting to start to feel myself walking towards the abyss of my own brain. I've put myself in this situation before, and I can harness it. It's kind of like
recognized it.
I recognize it. It's kind of like Inception. You know, like in Inception when he spins the totem and like he knows if that's real or fake.
Yeah.
I can. There's things in my head, and there's things that happen to me and inside me that I start to feel like, oh, okay, like this is it's showtime.
Well, your body can't have that much left. All you've got your 400 and plus some miles in, and all you've really eaten is McDonald's and gas station food and a couple of Red Bulls, which is not
I was gobbling. I mean, I definitely, you know,
your body's pulling everything whatever
possible.
It can out for energy.
So, like, exactly, like when I'm at a gas station, I drink all my water before I leave. So if I can see water, I basically, like, I start chugging as much as I can. And so I don't care if I have to pee 12 feet after the gas station, but I just know that I'm not leaving a place without full water.
Okay.
And so...
Not full water bottles, full water bladder.
Or just full water bottles too, but basically, yeah, like...
You have water in your body.
Yeah, I've learned over the years that, like, just, you know, drink the water you have, leave with full water, and, you know, and then go from there. So it's 2 a.m. now, or it's just before 3 a.m. It's just about 3 a.m. And I start to feel my body's changing, and I start to feel myself getting into this mode. I don't even know what to call it, but it's this, like, primordial euphoria. I'm so lethargic and so tired, but then all of a sudden my mind just flips where I'm, like, I'm actually somewhat awake, and I can start to, like, my senses get heightened, the lack of colors, obviously, but, like, my light pulses, I can see trails on my finger, like, I can see light trails. I'm starting to basically make myself trip. I'm tapping into my own adrenaline. And from 3 a.m., I basically just enter the zone. And so and it's a razor's edge. I can take myself off of it, and I can put myself back on in a weird way, but, like, music doesn't help. I need to focus. Like, at this moment, I literally feel that I'm not moving forward. I'm standing still, and the earth is moving underneath me. Like, I'm moving the earth underneath.
Man, it's so trippy.
It's a trip. And so, like,
are you aware of your cue cards? You
oh,
know
yeah.
where you need to turn
yep.
at this point?
Yeah, I'm still doing my checks. Like, I'm still repeating dates. I'm still, you know, singing songs, and I'm still, like, keeping myself
in a trip. But you're in this other world.
I'm tapping into this lucid state where basically tunnel vision, my senses are heightened. I can hear the gravel differently. It's just it's something that I've learned over time to, like, harness. And at this point, it's game on. And I'm attacking every hill. I'm punishing myself to the full extent. I'm literally just, like, I'm just chanting and just going for it. And it's, if anyone saw, like, or could see what, like, it's there's a few people that have seen me in this state, but basically, like, I am under my own duress, tripping balls. and making myself do this because it's just something that I didn't.
Because your body doesn't have anything.
Nothing left.
You're not drug induced at all. You're just like your body, your brain is saying, I don't have the resources I need for normal thought.
I'm in survival mode, but I can harness the survival mode and use it to my advantage, and I just keep moving. And
Leia, going to use that? No. She's like, Leia's got a 6-day. What do you have?
It's like your body has run out of food and muscle and fat to pull from, so it's like pulling from your brain.
Right.
Like it's using your brain cells as fuel.
But you're aware.
I'm aware of it. And like it lasts for hours. And it lasts for hours. And so I see the sunset. This is my second sunset.
So this is the sunset.
Sunrise. Sorry. So this is my second sunrise
coming up
that I've seen on my bike. This is sunrise of Saturday morning. So you started Saturday
Friday morning.
Yeah.
You know, you could get that same kind of adrenaline kick if you just got into boxing and just like got yourself punched in the face 5 times.
No, I've had that.
Quicker.
It's nothing like that. And it's not as fun because you forget a lot.
So exactly. So like I see my second sunrise for 2 days. I've got hundreds of miles up beneath me. I just keep moving and
do you have a counter? Do you even know? Like, are you 430 miles in? Are you 500 miles in? Do you have any idea where yet?
I zeroed out my GPS on the start of the race, so I knew where I was on my. So yeah, now I remember. Yeah, there was a GPX file, but also cue cards as well.
So you have a little bit of idea. Like I have 180 miles left.
Definitely.
Right? Okay.
Definitely. And
still a shit ton.
Exactly.
That's still like not even comprehensible to me.
And so.
Have that much ahead of you.
Exactly. And so I just rolled with it as far as I could, and I mean, I guess you could say exited this zone probably around 7 a.m. or so. So it was a good four-ish hours of me just on.
And so you hammered out these miles. And your legs climbed the hills, and you didn't have any problem, and you were
What kind of speed are you riding
floating.
At when you're saying you're hammering, when you're in the hammer zone?
I mean, obviously, I'm doing as best I can, but like we're talking anywhere between maybe 16 to 22.
Oh my gosh!
And just pushing as fast, and just pushing as hard
as I can. Imagine that, like 16 miles an hour, and you're not even aware that you're pedaling.
And on a single speed, just grinding up the hills and like grunting like a tennis player, and just moving.
There you go. You don't have to think about shifting. You don't have to think about what
exactly.
The brakes are. You don't have to guess what a bottle cage is. You just you pedal.
Exactly.
Uh-huh.
I mean,
so you have 4 hours of moving yourself along in this zone
where I'm I am under the powers of my own brain. And
when you come out of this, do you look at the clock and say, "Holy shit, I got that much done. I have this much left."
I'm tired as shit.
Okay.
So. Yes, I can't stay in this forever. And a lot of times I really only enter this zone that I'm talking about at night. It really exacerbates itself at night.
Okay.
And like pre-dawn hours. But basically I exited, and at this point I'm still somewhat into it a little bit because I know I need to keep moving forward. Like, I quit. But like I'm still how many miles away from Spring Valley? So I keep going as best I can. I start to see more tire tracks. And at my last 80 miles, and like, so my last 80 miles, I get back on course and I'm on the half lap. Now I'm on the Royals course. And so I start to see people. And so that's really kind of pushing me as well. Like I can, you know.
And the Royals, 162.
And so I have a guy, he rides up to me. And he just kind of like, I mean, I'm just in this zone. I'm like, not in my zone, but I'm just, you know, just pedaling. And this guy, Trenton from Minnesota, he rides up to me and he goes, "You're not on the Royal." You could just tell that I was just. And before he even offered, I was grabbing a flask out of his back pocket.
Like, yeah.
He was just like, I needed something.
What do you have in there?
I don't remember.
Yeah.
And so these guys really helped me and pushed me forward as well. And so we stopped.
That's got to be a breath of life when you see people.
It was awesome.
Yeah, and so back to civilization.
Exactly. So you start to use them as rabbits as well. And like, you know what I mean?
Light at the end of the tunnel.
Exactly. Light at the end of the tunnel. And so Trenton and his buddies definitely helped me like move forward as well. And we stopped at the bar, had a beer, and like kept going. And then he'd done the course before and kind of told me what was kind of coming up and stuff too. So basically the last 80 miles, I was riding as much as I could with other people. And just, you know, talking and jabbering and just, you know, keep going.
Yep.
And as I got closer and closer to Spring Valley, I kind of wanted to beat the 40-hour mark. So I could just see the time waning, and I just wanted to, I'm like, okay, I think I can do this in sub 40.
Uh-huh.
And
it's not
exactly
smooth on the way there. I mean,
no. And
it's hilly until the last fucking hill.
I booked it, and apparently you're supposed to stop behind the power station, but everything I read was that you had to finish, and the GPX file took me straight to the start line. So I finished at the start line 2 minutes before 40 hours. And you finished with the roaring crowds of no one. So you just did this entire nonsense. Like,
you get done and you're like,
and there's
no
one around. There's absolutely no one around. And so I limped to Subway and got a sub. At this point, Andrew's already back at camp. I mean, I don't even want to like pull my phone out or anything. I mean, it's just like all I want is food. And so at this point, I basically get food, force myself to ride the 2 more miles out to camp. And I woke up with a Subway wrappers in my lap in Andrew's truck. I didn't want to sleep. It was super windy. I didn't want to sleep outside. And I woke up in his truck sleeping like a pretzel in the front seat with Subway wrappers in my lap.
So you got food in you.
I got food in me, and that was it. So exactly. So like 612-ish miles in 4 days, put myself into this zone, unfortunately killed a rabbit, and just like had a blast through 3 states.
Most people would not say that was a blast. So.
Across the Mississippi twice. 3 times, actually, if you count the time me going over it to get to Spring Valley.
Yeah.
And so it was just like, this was a hell of a race. This was awesome.
Well, there's a race and a ride, and there's an adventure that you had that, it's not in anybody's wheelhouse.
It's hard to describe, and the best way I can just...
I hope our listeners out there are saying, what the fuck? I hope they listen to the whole thing because, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of people that have, well, you're talking about how hard the Margie is. How would you think this would do?
Fuck no.
Oh, we're at that point.
And I could have got a ride with Andrew. Like, I could have gotten a ride because he was going out to ride the course pre, but I'm like, no, I'm going to ride my bike to the race and quote-unquote train, not train, but basically just like get some miles under me and just kind of pre-enter this place that I am so addicted to. So it's hard to describe, and the best way I can describe it is this lucid, euphoric, primordial epicenter of my own brain. But I tap into it somehow, and I can harness it, and it's a wild ride.
I am never going to get there. I am never going to ride that because I'm never going to push myself that hard where I'm hallucinating in the middle of nowhere. So that's it's great that you can have a ride that it doesn't exist for me or most people. So
I can't wait for the next one.
What is the next one? Do you have it?
Oh, well, the next Alexander. I want to do it again. I want to be
quick. Do the same thing.
Knowing the course, just with these races, the hardest part is doing it first, and then the second and third time you do it, you know the course, you get the feel for it, and you just now I know what to bring at the on the first leg, second leg, you know, just all these different things. So I can't wait to go out again and do it quicker.
You're doing it this spring?
I'd love to. Yeah.
Awesome. I'm gonna go just to watch. I'll do part of it, but I'm not doing yours.
That's
Gomez says.
Our show this evening has been brought to you by those handsome lads at 8 Lumens and their couture line of fuck yeah men's hosiery. Take a trip to their sock drawer at 8lumens.party.
Check us out on Instagram at fatbike.com.
I'm Ambrose Douglas with the Fat Republican Team of Scandinavians.